Welcome to Muse Unseen, the podcast on how creatives do business. This is Zoe Omega.
And I am Claire Michelle. Today we are interviewing Cameron Price. Cameron is an actor who has just done it all. I don't know of a good way to kind of like wrap up everything he's done.
He's done commercials. He's done psychological horror. He has done more theatrical stuff. He's all over the place.
To Utah. He's moving to, well, I'll let you figure that one out in the episode there. But he has 8 different agents. He does this all the time. Takes classes. He gives us a lot of insight on the classes that he takes, how to get gigs. It's a very insightful interview from somebody who's in the business and in it to win it as well.
So without further ado, let's talk to Cameron Lee Price.
Hello!
Hello!
Hi! Hello, oh my God, I love your background.
Thank you. This is where the magic happens, you know?
I figured as much. Cameron is sitting in front of like blue, just like a blurred out background. It looks like a self-taping setup right now. Yeah. He's a pro. How are you? How are things going?
It's going good. It's going good. Good to. I haven't seen you two since, you know, the pandemic happened. So it was good to see your faces, you know?
Yeah.
A year ago.
But things have been well. Things have been well. Ignorant Creatures trailer dropped and is being released very, very soon. So,
yes. Ignorant Creatures, if you haven't heard, Cameron is on our podcast today because Cameron played an ignorant creature. I mean, I'm just gonna say it. I thought you were a total asshole when I first met you. And I was like, oh God, that's the person for the role. Perfect. I didn't know this going into your audition, but I mean, I would use the term method acting. Is this something that you do? Is this something that you like do in your roles all the time?
Well, I just grew up around like those type of people. I'm from Idaho, so I have a really good idea of the character that I was portraying, and it seemed rather not effortless, I wouldn't say, but I just had a very good grasp of it. I wouldn't say method is my go-to method. I really lean more into a lot of Uta Hagen, deeply into Stanislavski, as well as a mixture of Meisner training. So, but different roles require different approaches, of course, and it's not out of the question, I would say. Yeah.
Sure. Can you elaborate on that a little bit more? I know, like, so I'm a singer primarily. Like, that's, you know, where I express myself mostly. And when I hear kind of what you're saying, like, there are different methodologies used for different, like, genres of music. How is that kind of like how what you're thinking about with that with acting? How would you relate to that?
I wouldn't say that the different methods are for different genres. Each method can be used and is universal, basically. So Stanislavski can be used for comedy, drama, thriller, horror, musicals, whatever it may be. It's just mainly a foundation of different beliefs, as well as these different, a lot of these people have trained with, you know, for instance, you know, Stanislavski is one of the greats and many people have trained with him, and it's all trickled down into people's own interpretation, you know? So it's just about finding your own flow, but there is really, you should be finding your own mixture of the three. I don't know if that helps.
That makes a lot of sense. So where did you get your acting education? Did you start acting in high school?
Actually, in middle school, the first chance that I had to audition was for The Adventures of Tom Sawyer in my 6th grade drama class that was taught by a guy named John Padelko. And I auditioned and I got the lead role of Tom Sawyer. So I really like thought that I was kind of destined for greatness. And I remember like super specifically my art teacher's voice in my head after seeing my performance. And she was like, Cammy Pricey, Tommy Sawyer. And like, it's something like I've never gotten out of my head. And I just really enjoyed it. You know, I had a great time acting with my friends in it. And, but my grandpa passed away from pancreatic cancer when I was 13. So about a year after that, and I moved to a school that had completely no art school whatsoever. They had like a video production class, but I was a skateboarder back in the day. And like the teacher, Mr. Case, probably thought we were just going to do some like Jackass type style skits and, you know, just a bunch of not good productive stuff. So I was never allowed in that class because I was always kind of, I was class clown in high school. I got voted that as well as most attitude. So I was a bit of a rebellious one. I was probably one of the only kids in my class that listened to heavy metal. So I wasn't one of the
you were the outcast.
I was for sure. I was a black. I moved to that school and it was, you know, 26 kids in my graduating class. It was a bit of a shell shock from where I was. It wasn't too much bigger, a couple of hundred kids, but still. So anyways, after I graduated, I joined the Pullman Civic Theater and I was in The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. And I was Mr. Centaur in that, which was a really fun play. And I was directed by a fantastic director named Penelope Gonzalez, who I love. And she's still over in the Pullman area. She's fantastic. And she, you know, kind of helped me solidify my idea to go to school. I went to North Idaho College for theater and journalism. And then I started training with my first coach in April of 2015. And it's a mix of formal and it's a mix of a lot of classes and workshops. I, you know, constantly, you know, voiceover workshops. I was doing a lot of ongoing Meisner when I was back in Seattle, as well as Stanislavski. And then I was doing a Monday night improv class as well. So it was really this awesome cycle when I was back in Seattle of Monday night improv, Tuesday Stanislavski, and so on and so forth. It was, it helped diversify myself.
How does a group class kind of like work as opposed to like an individual teacher? What is like the difference between those, do you find?
I mean, just the focus on you for a one-on-one class, you know, which is really great. I do think that there is a lot of value in doing group classes. And I personally myself do group classes, but I also have my one-on-one coach specifically. I think that group classes are fantastic for being able to observe other actors, be watching other people. I'm able to learn so much. And I mean, being able to see other people explore their own empathy is just fantastic, you know, and it's all part of the reason that I started to do this is because I love connecting. And it's awesome. I just finished a class this last Thursday, an 8-week class with BGB Studio in LA. And like, that was a class where I felt everybody was really on each other's level. And it was just a really fantastic presentation of just like us young artists just hustling and doing it. It was great.
So what do you look for in a class? Like, how do you know if a class is a good fit for you?
Totally. So you kind of know when you find the right coach, you know. Really, I look for actors that are hopefully on the same level as me that will be good scene partners. It's not fun feeling like you're having to pull the weight. And I also don't like too many people in a class. If there's a class of, you know, I think that 10 and below is pretty normal for the most part. And that way, it also depends on the duration. You know, I'm more okay with having a bit of a longer class if it means, or with more people, if it means a longer class. You know, you can do a scene study class, or you can do a scene study script analysis. You can do more of like an audition technique class. It really kind of depends on where you are as an actor. I really encourage actors who are just starting out now to be doing a self-tape or a Zoom workshop class. Find a coach or a casting director who is doing them in your market, because that is the main, that is the what is mainly happening right now and will be for at least another few months until the vaccine takes a hold. So actors need to be getting into a good self-tape and Zoom workshop class. That way they know how to be lighting themselves, the framing. They need to get a good backdrop. Yes, you can book with not having a backdrop, but I even just heard a casting director on Clubhouse saying, get a backdrop. It's $5 off Amazon. Get a sheet, you know, get something that also brings out your eyes. I have blue eyes, so I use a blue backdrop. You know, it's a get a ring light off Amazon, get soft boxes, and so on and so forth. You really need to establish like a really good group of actors around you. Hopefully you can use them as readers, if not in the room because of COVID, use them as your self-tape readers, you know, and bring in these people who think would be better. Oh, I think this person could read for this because he's a father. He can help me with the perspective of the character I'm auditioning for, or so on and so forth, you know? So yeah, back to that. I think that, you know, once you kind of are getting very familiar with your self-tape setup, I think then definitely get into the craft of it. And it's a lot of these deep workout and scene study classes is where I think that a lot of actors will start to find their groove. And whether it be, you know, a comedy class or a sitcom class, those are kind of two different type of classes completely. You have to really ask yourself what kind of acting you want to be and what kind of acting you want to do and what kind of actor you want to be. And that will help you define and choose the class that is suited for you.
So how do you make the transition from taking all these lessons to actually being able to be a professional actor? How did you make the jump?
Well, I'm still taking lessons all the time, of course. I would say that COVID really allowed me to be that professional actor, as crazy as it seems, you know, not having to, you know, for those who don't know me, I was living in Seattle from October 30th, 2016 until August 10th when I moved to Salt Lake City. And in that 3 years and 9 months, I was constantly driving to Portland, which is 6 hours round trip for like a 5 hour audition or a 5 minute audition. So it allowed me to really, I was pretty good at self-taping before. It really has made me hone my self-tape game completely. I feel so much more comfortable doing it, and I'd rather do a self-tape than drive 45 minutes for that matter. The classes were the foundation to help me be that professional actor is what I should be saying, because everything that I've learned along the way, I've been able to apply to set, and that's where a lot more knowledge is gained as well. Just by being on set is the best form.
Something that, you know, you say like, I prefer self-taping, you know, and I will tell you as like a director, and you've done some directing, I think in the past as well, you get to see somebody in person, you get to see their body language and things. And there's so much that's not captured over video, especially, you know, if it's like from here up, right? But there is so much work involved when it comes to the body language of the actor as well. And I was like curious, like on top of that, like, do you find that you can get more calls or less calls based upon your self-tape audition?
Are you talking like kind of my ratio of bookings in terms of like real narrative and dialogue focused roles versus very?
Yeah, exactly. How is the difference there? Right.
Oh yeah, those are two different like territories for self-tapes, which is really fun. It's always fun to get a scene and you have a lot of dialogue to go through, you know, but really crafting that world in a self-tape is a fun challenge. And I think that just comes with character research. Character, you know, what kind of, where does this dude, or if you, whoever it is that you're auditioning for, if you're going out for a burly, gruff mountain man that's been through a lot, he's probably going to walk a little bit differently or have a bit of a different posture. A lot of that stuff is also not completely explored in the self-tape, not until really like, like chemistry reads and stuff like that. Just as for instance, in an initial self-tape, for the most part, you could do one or two takes, one take with an accent, one take without an accent, which is something I do if it's said that the character is needing it, you know, just so they know the first time around it's something I'm capable of. But this is a lot of stuff that will come with just working with the director and just the deeper you get into it through callbacks, they'll give you a little bit more information about the character that can tie into it. So
you just got done with a film. I think it's called Roseblood.
Roseblood was a film that I produced in August of 2019, and I'm very proud of it. That was done with my very good friend Philip Cornwall. He is a director that I actually acted in his very first feature film called Dusk to Dusk. This was my second role ever. It was a psychological thriller based on a character named Samuel Nance, who was an agoraphobic that was taking a lot of antipsychotic medications. And meanwhile, there's a big windstorm that was going to be hitting his area. So it was a psychological thriller about, is he going to get out of his agoraphobia before this windstorm or get eaten alive by it? So
good time to have an agoraphobic thriller during COVID, right?
we should have resurrected it. I mean, we've had some talks about it, and I was like, it would really resonate nowadays.
Yeah.
But so we met in 2016 doing that, and since then, we've just kept in contact. He kind of told me this story, Roseblood, a couple of years ago. And then I was like, just get a story together and then we'll see how it goes. And as soon as he got me that first draft, kind of, I was like, okay, it's go time. And 12 characters, and it was an ensemble cast, satirical horror. And it has since gone on to the New York Flash Film Festival, Idaho Horror Film Festival, and a couple of others. So and we're still submitting it a little bit as is too, but since then we have done a micro short called Lucinda, and that is sitting at 3 minutes and 15 seconds right now, and we're finishing the final color correction stages and about to go through Film Freeway for submitting that as well.
This 3 minute was like, crafting that story in that short a time was a challenge, I bet. Like, How do you decide what scenes to cut as a producer, as a director? Like, tell us a little bit about your experience from like the other side of the camera.
Sure. I don't say anything about what scenes to cut. That is completely, I'm a producer, so, as well as a casting director. So I like to, in terms of Roseblood, as soon as I read the story, I started producing, location scouting, production management, line producing, working out a budget, crowdfunding. I hired all of the crew. This was back in the good old days before COVID, and we were able to do in-person auditions, which we did. And then we hosted a round of, or I'm sorry, we did a first round of self-tapes, and then we did callbacks in person, in Tacoma. And, so in terms of working with the director, I don't give him any input on his, I shouldn't say I don't give him any input, but I don't give any, it's his story. I really pride myself on working with the director well to bring out his specific vision. And really, Philip is a fantastic director in terms of cutting the fat as well as a writer. Roseblood is a 25 minute film, but it really couldn't have been shorter whatsoever. And working with indie budgets as well is also a really good way of cutting your story as well, because you're able to know. So a budget is a big part of that for sure. We got super lucky with Roseblood. We filmed at a beautiful $1.92 million house in Enumclaw, Washington.
Wow.
Yeah, it was, I couldn't believe it. An actress with a talent agency that I was with at the time connected me with it, and so thankful for that. It was awesome. So we found a perfect location.
So how has COVID affected the industry, both behind and in front of the camera?
From an actor's perspective, and speaking specifically to the Seattle, like Portland market that I was a part of at, primarily, I was thankfully, and still am, right with the same agency as that when COVID hit, and a lot of things just completely shut down. I didn't end up doing a film in Seattle until late July, I believe. And that was with a lot of COVID compliance regulations, of course, and all that, but really completely self-tapes now. I mean, you can, as long as you have a good lighting setup and a backdrop and all that kind of, stuff needed for a good self-tape setup, you are able to record from your room and submit anywhere for the most part. But
yeah,
a lot of places you cannot work. They will not let you work unless you're a local hire. So, or, you know, for instance, wow. There's also, yes, so there's also
not bringing anybody in.
No, definitely not. There's a lot of gigs will also say you have to be a resident local hire, which means in like the 30-minute area, you know, of that.
Is that why you decided to move?
Correct. Yeah. So actually over here in Utah,
really?
Utah is popping right now for film there. For one, COVID is not as much of a worry. I mean, I've been on set many times. The last week I was on set 3 times. I didn't have to get a COVID test once for any of those, which is pretty abnormal. And they're lifting the mask regulation on April 4th, I believe. But of course, for film sets, we still will be wearing them.
Yeah.
But it's definitely not as sensitive as it is in California and Portland and Seattle. And I mean, of course, because Seattle is one of the first epicenters, or Kirkland, Washington specifically, you know, so I understand the sensitivity. And I was living in Bellevue, which is 10 minutes from Kirkland at the time, which is really scary. Down here in Utah, they have a couple of production companies that are doing a lot of social media advertising and providing actors with gigs to get by, and including me, which is really awesome. So, but yeah, you really have to work in your market for the most part, or I mean, because if you're in Los Angeles and they need you for a COVID test the next day and you're somewhere else, or for that day for that matter, it is definitely that urgent sometimes. You got to get there. And if not, you're not going to be booking the gig, unfortunately. So luckily, I will say the amazing thing that has definitely come out of COVID is so many casting directors and acting coaches and agents and managers have been going on Instagram Live. They've been Facebook Living. They have been on Clubhouse, which is this new incredible app, and they are just giving so much of their time. And kind of what they're all saying is demystifying the casting process, because we kind of before this didn't really know who it was we're sending these tapes out to. Now we have like faces or personalities better off to connect with these casting directors. When we're submitting with them, we know who we're dealing with. And so the best thing, I would say it's at a beautiful time to be an actor right now because of so much information and knowledge given to you right now. I really wish that this information was available to me back in 2015 when I really started taking classes and taking this to the next level, because I was completely lost. And I mean, there's also so many podcasts that are out there, such as Audrey Hill's Actors, Leslie Kahn does one called Conversations. The BGB Studio does the acting podcast. Anthony Mindel does Anthony Mindel interviews. He's an amazing coach. So, I mean, it's a great time to be a sponge right now and just soaking up all this information, because It really goes to show these people, they really want us to win. They love us. They want us to book. They want to make it easier for us. The easier that we make their jobs, then they can go home. They can, you know, go on to the next job and so on and so forth. And so they really want us to win and book. And I think that COVID has really just made the transparency that much easier, and the access is just there where it quite frankly really wasn't. So, and then you can also be training with literally any coach in Los Angeles, New York, wherever you want to, from your own room via Zoom. It is incredible. I have been doing it. I just finished a class in LA for 8 weeks with BGB Studio, and it's great. So your knowledge is so much more accessible. It's fantastic.
So I guess, you know, like I'm kind of reading between the lines here, and I'm seeing that a lot of your job, because you do this full time, like this is what your career is. Correct. A lot of what this is like, you know, taking classes and doing auditions, taking classes, doing auditions. And then you get that, you know, you get that call, and like, you know, how many of these are you juggling? And then on top of that, How does your like label and management, do you have management? How does this all kind of like fit together in your life?
Okay, so I do not have management at this time. I just signed with a theatrical agent, or I'm sorry, I signed with a commercial agent in LA the other day. I'm now with Activity in LA. Thank you. And he is currently pitching me to managers right now, as well as theatrical agents. Yes, it's on the horizon. We don't have labels, of course, for actors. You know, of course, you coming from a music background, you know.
Oh, yeah.
But yes, I do have agents. I have a total of 8 agents for that matter. Being in Salt Lake City, I'm a short distance from, I'm 6 hours from Vegas. I'm 5 hours from Boise. I'm 7 hours from Denver. I'm kind of in like interesting little middle points. So I developed and signed with agencies in each of these markets just so I have that many more influx of auditions coming to me. Because really, like you said, it is the work. It is auditioning. Auditioning is the job, seriously. The better your reps get, the more auditions you're getting, and the more you're able to practice your craft. So yeah, it's definitely a good juggle. For one, taking care of yourself, do whatever you have to do to make sure your mental health is in line. I mean, if you need to be passing up on audition because you feel it, you know, talk to it with your representation. Say, I just kind of need to sit this one out I need a mental health day, you know. They should understand that it's difficult times right now. A lot of actors are self-submitting right now as well. So it's in between finding gigs yourself and submitting yourself, or having your reps submit you. And this is more so for the actors who are unrepresented, who are still self-submitting. And then, yes, getting in classes, you know, going to the gym if it makes you feel good, you know, eating healthy, going to therapy, doing yoga. All of these things are all part of just making you a better human and a better person and a better actor, so on and so forth.
When you're working with your agents and representation, then, you know, like, there's got to be like a trust element here between both of you. How do you build that rapport with them?
Yeah. I think transparency is definitely a way to do that. I think that, for one, I think that that foundation is already there. They probably wouldn't have returned your emails or your phone calls if they didn't want to build this with you. I think that it's more so the trust is already there until it's not, or you do something to make them lose trust for you, which I hope that no actors are doing that. It's just, you know, the fact that it's a team aspect, it's an invite, you know, and the fact that the better that we communicate with our agents and tell them what it is that we want to be going out for, what it is that we see our brand as, the better that they can help us and we can work together to be booking the jobs that are suitable for us. And so I think that communication is a huge builder of trust. Absolutely. And kind of like the fact that knowing that your agent knows you're doing the work, you're in classes, you are booking jobs, you are you're doing monologues, I think that, and that's one thing, is that the actors need to definitely let their agents know, hey, I'm getting new headshots, I want to discuss these looks with you, I'm thinking about training with this coach, have you heard anything about them, do you have any other recommendations that I should look into? Really, I think that keeping the lines of dialogue open is the best way to establish that trust, as well as
that's good advice.
And being there for them as well, just as they are there for you.
Yeah. So for the future, then, you know, you just moved to, well, you, I just learned that you have like multiple markets that you're working in now. You didn't just move; you also are looking in different markets. So, like, what's coming up for you then? Like, do you have anything on the horizon that you're looking forward to?
Yeah, so I'm actually moving to Los Angeles at the end of this month, which is crazy. Yeah, I'm going to be touching down in 15 days, which is wild.
You have this like excitement and like this, like there's also hesitation there though. So where's the hesitation come from?
It's just scary. You know, I've worked for this like for the last five, six years. And I knew it was always in the cards, but it's just happened very organically. I didn't expect to even look into finding representation in Los Angeles at this time. I finished up a class with BGB Studio and I was organically connected with this commercial agent because of it. So the stars kind of just aligned with that. And me and my new agent get along really great. And I got a place lined up over there, which is looking very promising with good roommates. And so that's happening at the end of this month. And then what is in my cards after that is getting management as well as theatrical representation. And I got a short film coming up at the end of the month called Sandy's Gone. That's happening on the 27th. Potato Dreams of America is a feature film that I had a small scene in. It's in South by Southwest, which is officially live today. We're doing this on March 16th. So anybody who has tickets to South by Southwest, definitely check out Potato Dreams of America by Wes Hurley. It is a fantastic, based on a true story, autobiographical, and directed by West Potato Hurley. So check that out. Really, I'm just very excited to get to Los Angeles. I have a couple of aspirations. I have a studio that I want to start training at, or a theater more so after it opens back up, that I have in mind. The Slauson Rec Center in Compton, California. And I just am very excited to get to LA. Get in the rooms, because there is in-person auditions right now, and just start developing these relationships with casting directors. That way, when it's really time for it to be go time, I'm more comfortable and I'm familiar and I don't feel like so much a fish out of water. So it's a really big step. You know, I'll be giving up kind of doing some of the smaller gigs that I've been doing here in Utah that have been still good little commercials and good for real material and helping me pay my rent. But it's scary to give those up, but I think it's necessary, and I am really hoping that the leap pays off.
Yeah, it will though. You have so much drive, and like everything that you do just like puts yourself in the like in a new opportunity. You know, the classes that you're taking, right? You know, the agents that you work with, the communication, like podcasts and things like this that you're doing. Like every step that you take just gets you one step closer to it. And just, you know, don't let that fear get in the way. Because the second you let that fear get in the way, everything just comes crashing down. So you'll be fine. Just don't let the fear get in the way.
I love it. That's like a perfect note to end it on. It feels very resolute. You know what I mean? And that's what I think it is. Like, I think that I believe in myself a lot, you know, I really do. I think I wouldn't have gotten this far if I don't believe in myself. And I think COVID has also really taught me to just completely accept my essence. I think I dug myself into a hole a lot for comparing myself or trying to do a self-tape and say, oh, I want to have the stillness of Marlon Brando for this, you know, and then I watch it and I don't have that stillness and I like create the self-hatred, and it's completely not necessary because I'm a completely different actor than Marlon Brando. Me and him we're completely different people, and really accepting myself for really who I am and embracing that, because I know I talk fast and I have weird quirks and I can be abrasive at times. And I realize all of these things, you know, and I've made it, you have to use these traits and make them your tools, of course, you know, and you have to use them to kind of spearhead your journey, so to speak, I would say. And don't put them in the backseat, put them shotgun.
Definitely.
Thanks, y'all. I appreciate it.
Where can we find you? How can we follow your journey?
Sure, y'all. So you can find me on IMDb, Cameron Lee Price. Also on Instagram, Cameron L. Price. Mm-hmm. I don't have Twitter. I don't have TikTok. You can also find me on Clubhouse. I think my name on there is Cameron Lee Price. I'm pretty sure. Find me, follow me, and you can find me through one of my 8 agents as well. Eden Talent, TNG Models, Deborah Maddox Agency, Creative World Model and Talent, All About You Talent, Activity Talent, Anderson Talent, McCarty Talent.
In other words, what you're saying is just look you up on IMDb.
Just look me up on IMDb. You'll see all of them. They're all linked there. So, and of course, follow these two lovely individuals that have this is my first podcast, so thank you for
you're welcome. For
this was a great first experience. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you so much. You've been a great guest.
Thank you.
All right, Claire, Zoe, it's been a pleasure. Let's talk soon. Don't be strangers, okay?
Definitely. All right, bye, Cameron. Take care.
See ya later.
I thought that went really well, and I thought we had a good balance of both of us asking questions. I thought that went really, really well. I felt good about it.
I really like Cameron. Cameron's so great. And like when he's like saying that he wants to go to LA, I was like, just, you know, like it was such a shock to me because I, in the back of my head, I was like, I met him and I was like, why isn't he in LA yet? Why isn't he in LA? And turns out he's headed there like in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
So I'm so happy that he's actually going to LA. And you know, just as a reminder that Cameron did play a role in Ignorant Creatures. He was an extremely ignorant creature. Got a nice close up in the shot as well. If you are interested in seeing Ignorant Creatures, you can find it on March 29th at youtube.com/C/littlegraycat. And that is about a non-binary person coming out at work for the first time and how they cope with everything and their partner.
And on April 2nd, you can see Ignorant Creatures behind the scenes footage on the Little Gray Cat YouTube. I had the pleasure of shooting the behind the scenes footage and photography. I had a blast. The cast and crew were great. And so thank you for listening to Muse Unseen, the podcast on how creatives do business. This is Zoe Omega.
And I have been Claire Michelle. If you are interested in finding Muse Unseen elsewhere, you can find us on Facebook, Twitter. And if you are interested in being on the podcast yourself, please email us at museunseen@gmail.com. We are always looking for new and interesting artists to interview. Send us an email. Thank you for listening, and goodbye.